Hi, good afternoon, and welcome to our first webinar of 2017. Just checked actually the prospective list here of people in attendance, so this is more obviously driven towards landlords in compared to our letting agent market. So it's good to see that 90% plus attendees are actually our landlords, which is obviously highly relevant. Obviously, we don't want you to teach, we don't want to teach anybody to suck eggs or anything like that. A lot of the advice that's going to come in these next 20 to 25 minutes is very practical, very common sense led, and it's which just taking emotion out of everything in terms of the decision-making processes that you'll need to take, and hopefully there's a lot of takeaways for you as well. So yeah, time to pay for Christmas, free advice. Free advice in terms of what we do and how we do it, and aimed directly at landlords. So today, in terms of introduction and format, this is a webinar. So you can hear me, for those that are not familiar with webinars, I can't hear you. On the right-hand side of your panel on your screen, there's a text box there, so feel free to ask questions at any time during this. I will be able to see those questions. If there's a lot that come through, I'll try my best to answer them as we go along during the webinar. If there's any questions that do not get answered, then we will cover them off at the end of the webinar during our Q&A session. If there's still questions that you feel we haven't answered, then we will go back to every single person that's asked a question. So text box right-hand side, ask any questions as we go along, and I'll try my best to answer them all. Okay. So rent arrears after Christmas is the core topic we're talking about. There's a lot of key subjects within this. I will be flying over them, obviously, time-wise. We're talking about protecting your rental income as well, just making you aware of the things that you can do, and there's potential products there in place as well for anyone that does consider this. In terms of webinars, we save all of our webinars in terms of our account details in our My Native. So once you log in to our system, you can access all the webinars. So we ran 10 webinars last year, so you can access and download those webinars. And then obviously for this year as well, every single person that's attended will get a copy of this webinar as well. For those that haven't attended, we'll send a copy as well. But if you ever want to access these at any other time, they're actually saved in our system. So for those of you who've got username and password, just log into our system, hit the marketing resources section, and all the webinars are there for you to listen to at any time, past or present. Okay, January blues. From a tenant's perspective, what we are now, the 25th of January, a lot of you would have had payment dates, prior to this period. Some of you would have been paid, some of you might not have been paid. Cash has run out, credit card bills are arriving. Many landlords potentially won't see their rent payments when they should. They might be a few days late, it might be a few weeks late, you might have already been in communication with your tenants. What should you do? How should you handle this whole process? Do you give grace period to tenants? Have you got good relationships with them? Do you believe their excuses? All these scenarios can have obviously severe impacts. So there's been a lot of change recently within our sector, and there's a lot of change to come. As landlords ourselves, there's tax relief changes coming in the 1st of April this year. When the Irish government actually did similar changes on tax relief, I think it was around 5 years ago, what they saw was obviously rents, almost double. The Irish government obviously realised this and changed this back. Obviously, with our Tory-led government, they're trying this as well. I think the example was, don't quote me on this, this is just an example that I seen the other day via an accountant. Average rent was £1,600 per month. I think the interest relief typically from a landlord claiming on a 12-month tenancy was around £4,500. By 2020, when all these changes are in place, that relief will reduce to around £1,000. So it's £3,500 loss or difference there. So that's a major implication. From a survey that we ran to our client base a couple of months ago, almost 7 out of 10 landlords have set up a limited company and bought their portfolio back into their company. Obviously, there's different benefits and different tax incentives for that as well. So each landlord would have been getting advice from their respective accountants and if it's worthwhile for them to do this or not in terms of restructuring basically in their portfolio and how best to do this moving forward. So, you know, if you've got one or two properties, it might not have been the best option to do that. If you've got a portfolio, depending on the equity, then it could have been possible for you as well. So these are options still available now before these changes come in play. There's been a lot of legal and regulation changes as well. I'm going to touch on a couple of them. The biggest one that's affecting letting agents at this moment in time, and obviously some landlords as well, is the proposed ban on upfront fees. So this is quite a huge topic actually as well. And you know, we're only in January, only got announced in the autumn statement by Mr. Hammond. So this proposed ban, on latest information, we're looking at around 2018, it either can come in April or October. What this will actually mean is that for landlords who charge upfront fees or admin fees or, you know, to register deposits, inventories, check-in, check-out, tenancy agreements, all these services that have a tangible cost to them, they're looking at getting scrapped, basically. So if they're getting scrapped at the upfront fee, where will that landlord, or more importantly, where will that letting agent be able to recoup those fees? And obviously there's a number of scenarios and role plays that can be, or strategies that can be adopted for this. But the biggest one would be was for the landlord to increase their rent. So there's been some predictions there that landlords could be increasing rents by around £25 to £30 per month. Most tenancy agreements have that inflation clause now, or that rent increase clause, of around 2 to 4% on average. So we've seen a lot of our landlords looking at increasing the rents for this year. And, you know, we see that same pattern across the UK. Agents obviously have a business to run. They need to make some money. They need to obviously ensure cash flow is coming in. If they're getting penalised in X, Y, and Z, unfortunately, landlords will as well. Landlords will obviously want to recoup that in some way. The biggest and best way possible is by increasing the rent slightly. So a lot of these changes are having these impacts, which is going to ultimately potentially lead to rent increases. Yes, they might not be a huge increase. If your rent's £1,000 and you're looking at a £50 increase per month for that tenant, it could not potentially be a higher cost. But for a tenant on anything from £300 to £500, a £50 increase or a £25 increase can be, that the perception of that can be a lot higher. So there's lots of these legal updates, lots of these challenges coming for landlords, and it seems as though we're being targeted at the moment by the government. And there's three or four changes that could impact us. So rents are going to increase. Obviously, landlords want to protect their yields. Do you want to protect their investments? Do you want to look at long-term into the future? And it's exactly like agents now as well. They're looking at ways to recoup and look at strategies in order to replace that income coming in from the upfront fees to tenants. But obviously, there's no fees. There's nothing that's being stated at the moment that's anything changing to renewal fees or end of tenancy fees. There's nothing that's being stated in those terms at the moment. All this is to do is with upfront fees being charged to tenants. Okay, next slide. Check the questions. There's a lot of questions coming in, so hopefully I've answered a few of them now. And if there's obviously any more, text box on the right, feel free to put them through. Managing rent arrears and your next steps and best practices. There's a lot of information to fit into this slide. In a simple nutshell, with managing rent arrears, the most common sense approach is to act as fast as possible. It always makes me laugh, this one, because on one respect, I understand it from being a busy landlord and you've potentially got a portfolio of properties and you've got a full-time job, that you might actually not know that money is actually missing from your account for several months. So when we receive a call on average from our advice line, the landlord is in 3 to 4 months of arrears. And it might be, it's obviously shocking to some to find out that, but then when I hear stories in the press of the Hatton Garden robbery, and I think a lady came forward several months later, a few weeks ago, and she realised that she'd been missing £7 million worth of gold or assets. So some people just don't realise these things, and it happens every single day. So obviously, you know, set up a bank account separately for anything to do with your property. So it's your mortgage going out, it's your income coming in, anything to do with that property, it's in separate bank accounts. If you've got a portfolio, then obviously you're running them all from that one portfolio. Don't mix it with your existing current account or your bank account. Sometimes you could miss these things. So when it comes to rent arrears, you've got to act fast, you've got to act swiftly, you've got to treat this as a business and not a charity. It's, you know, they're not your best friend. if you rent it to friends and family, obviously that's a very high risk because it puts you in a sticky situation. This renting a property, managing it and collecting that rent has got to be seen as a business and not a relationship or a charity. You're there to receive income on it, whether it's an accident, whether you're an accidental landlord or you're an amateur landlord trying this out, or you're a professional landlord. You need that income to come in to create your yield and to obviously pay your mortgage. There's a number of elements you can do there in terms of going to see the tenant, talking to them face to face, find out what's going on, get on the phone, send a text message if face to face isn't possible. Obviously legal action is the worst case scenario and it's a last case resort. If you can't arrange anything amicable in between, it's just obviously sticking to strict timelines and deadlines. And there's legal notices such as Section 8s and 21s. The biggest thing that's came out in terms of legal regulation that's really impacted what we do here for our legal division is the Deregulation Act that came out in October 2015. The amount of paperwork and legislation that's increased our team here in our legals is increased by threefold. The biggest, when I asked the team this morning just to update me on the biggest query they get on the back of this, and it is that landlords don't have gas safety certificates and EPCs. Obviously, energy performance certificate for an EPC and then a gas safety certificate from a gas qualified engineer to go out to give you that certificate. You know, these are essentials to renting out your property. And worst case scenario, if you ever needed to do anything in terms of rent arrears, you'd need typical documentation like this, for example, as well. We did cover deregulation 6 months on in terms of when it was rolled out from October. I think that might be in the March or April one last year. So, you know, there's a full half an hour webinar on that one if anyone wants to get up to speed with Deregulation Act in terms of how that impacted ourselves as landlords. The other one as well is disrepair. That's a big one to look out for. For repairs, you need to act swiftly for any type of repair. Swiftly, promptly, keep the communications line open and do something about it straight away. No matter how small it is, just do something about it. Because worst case scenario, if you do want to go to the evictions and the legal side, that could be dragged out for a very long time, purely based on your reaction or quality to fix a problem. A new Section 8 came out actually in 1st of December 2016, part of the Immigration Bill Act, with the right to rent checks on our tenant reference inside. And that got snuck in by the government. So there is a new updated Section 8 notice. A lot of our clients still don't know about this in terms of agents, and obviously landlords need to be aware of this. So there's a few new mandatory grounds added to that, purely because of the right to rent bill, and obviously anyone who houses an illegal immigrant, they can move forward on eviction obviously a lot swifter, so give more powers based on the immigration side. So we're still getting clients sending us the old Section 8s, and then once they see our Section 8, then obviously they're up to speed. So just bear that in mind, Section 8s. Okay, so best practices, a few tips in terms of what to watch out for. You know, excuses for non-payment of arrears. You know, set strict deadlines and timelines. Try not to agree to payment plans. From our experience, 9 out of 10 don't actually work. And just keep close communications. And what we, you know, best, some tips here in terms of communication. You know, send a text message saying a thank you for the rent every single month. Something small, you get in touch. Obviously do your inspections regularly, every 3 months, every 6 months, face to face. If they allow you to do them, drop them an email. If you're local, drop in to see them at renewal stage, 6 months, 12 months, whenever that may be. Did you send them an Xmas gift, a nice little bottle of wine? Thank you for being a great tenant, keeping the place tidy. Whatever that may be, keep those communication lines open all the time. Don't just do nothing at all. Look at your bank account, see the rent comes in, and that's it, and the property sits there. Keep the communications open. The main reason why is if that tenant gets into any difficulties whatsoever, you'd want them to come and approach you first and tell you first whether you're an agent or a landlord. You'd rather them do that than tell you nothing at all, and then obviously you get into a sticky situation. It costs you time, money, stress, emotional energy. You don't want it to get to that stage in an ideal scenario. Other tips, obviously give neighbours the heads up if you're obviously renting out your property, or, you know, give them your contact details, any trouble, any issues. Obviously, you want them to let you know first. Fast resolution on all repairs, obviously, that's key. If you need a guarantor based on the back of your reference, we'd always recommend that you get a guarantor. Obviously, if they're students or in receipt of local housing allowance or housing benefit, get a guarantor this is protecting your investment here. Always get a guarantor where possible. If you can't get a guarantor, then I'd suggest it's highly likely that you don't rent to that tenant and you move elsewhere. That being said, a lot of tenants aren't receipt of housing benefits are great tenants as well, so you just need to weigh that up, and that's personal circumstances and a personal decision. For myself personally, I've got a mixture of tenants, and there's pros and cons. Be proactive for non-payment. Look at your bank accounts. Review the payment schedules. Yeah, agents run a standard process, which is quite effective. They chase, they look at it at day one of the arrears, look at it at day 7, day 14, and day 21. And there's a strategic process for each of those stages, whether it be a letter, a phone call, a text message, or a potential face-to-face visit. Failing that, it goes to 30 days. Then obviously that action will be more serious by way of a pre-court action letter or a serious letter to say you have 7 to 14 days, whatever it may be, in order to pay this rent. Otherwise, we will move forward to legal action and small claims, summons, etc., etc., and CCJs may be added to record. So that is a very strict process, but obviously agents, it's in their best interest to obviously get this money in from the tenant to manage that property effectively in order to pay the landlords. And obviously, landlord gets paid, agent gets their payment as well. So be proactive. And finally, business is not a charity. So being a landlord is a business and not a charity. It's a clear rule you have to work out. Obviously, if you've only got a couple of properties and you get on really well with them, or it's your friends or your tenants, then you potentially could see yourselves in issues in the future in a sticky situation. In our legals division here, we have everything from brothels, drug farms, cannabis, parents evicting their kids evicting their parents. We've seen it all. 9 out of 10 of the cases, the landlord or the agent will say this one's a bit different. It's not straightforward. But I think to the amount of it, I think we're around 120, 130 evictions per month now in terms of county court evictions. But that's just a small drop in the ocean. Really, it's probably around 5% actually of the monthly evictions total. So it's just something that you need to keep an eye on, obviously. The biggest thing here is the emotional energy and the time and stress that it could cause you, your family, and obviously what it could put in your financial bank account as well. Okay. I'm just trying to check if I've just answered all the questions, and somebody's put, if you wanted to set up a limited company, would they have to do that before the government changes take effect? Not necessarily. You can do it any time. It's just up to you. You need to weigh up the circumstances if it's beneficial to you or not. So seek advice from your accountant. You don't have to do it today. And just to make a note as well on that tax relief that will be coming in April, it'll be a staged approach. So it will increase as time goes on. Without going into the technicalities of it, it'll start at around 25%, 50%, 75%, then it will be 100% every year. So I think it should be in full flow from 2020-2021 tax year. Okay. So yeah, next point, protecting your rental income. This is just something just purely for awareness, really. Not a lot of people know about rent protection insurance and protecting your income. Average rent in the whole UK is around £749, £752. It fluctuates. If we just take out London, obviously if we include London, which is some of our clients are from now on this webinar, our average rents are around £950 to £960. So it just totally depends. Obviously, that's a lot of income, obviously, that you want to protect. For example, for a simple insurance policy for around £10 to £15 per month, you can protect that income and cover your legals. And that's what it is in a nutshell. When this product first came to the market, I'd say probably 1 in 8 landlords were aware of this. Now, 5-6 years later down the line, I'd say at least 1 in 5 landlords, and our conversion rate's quite similar to that as well. So 1 in 5 landlords actually take this on. So in terms of insurances and what landlords have and what landlords haven't, this is just a rough snapshot of our internals from our general insurance division. Almost 3/4 of our landlords on our database do have buildings and contents insurance. Just under 1 in 5 have rent protection insurance. Legal cover is obviously just covering the eviction side of it. And then landlord emergency cover, obviously says exactly what it says in the tin, just under 10%. So these are popular insurance products that help you to protect your income and do what you do. You know, they can let you carry on and continue being a full-time worker or employee, or you run your own business and you've got your projects and your portfolio on the side. You've got building the contents, you feel safe and protected, you've got your rent and legal protection cover, or you've just got your legal only cover, and then you've got your landlord emergency cover. These are the most popular products and services that landlords would normally bolt onto their properties and their portfolio. So we've put that there in just to build a bit of awareness of those products and what's out there in the market. And I think the biggest reason why they obviously they aren't all 100% like car insurance is because it's not mandatory or enforceable as law. It's just something, it's, you know, if you felt the pain and you've been down the legal route and you don't want to go through that again, great, you've got an insurance to cover you in the future. You know, if the house gets burnt down for whatever reason or disaster, you'll definitely have insurance. Obviously, with the insurances on your properties and your portfolio, your residential, you know, mortgage providers need to see that document beforehand. I think the reason why it's three quarters is because some landlords just think, well, I've never made a claim, I'm paying £250 on a premium every single year, why would I need to renew it? So yeah, a quarter of landlords might not renew it. You have it for your own house, so why wouldn't you have it for your buy-to-let? And that's the same principle that you need to bear in mind. Just a quick brief run over of rent protection insurance. It covers you in the case of rent arrears. The product pays out all your rents and covers all your legals in the case of eviction. So rent's covered up to £50,000 for the whole claim, and legals is covered up to a potential of £50,000 as well for the eviction process. So you do not lose out any rent, and you do not have to pay for any legals while this process is ongoing. It protects you from the unknown. Yes, we have a tenant referencing division, and you know, we've just surpassed over 500,000 references for the business, which is fantastic, but we cannot predict accident, sickness or unemployment in that tenant situation, and something like rent protection can cover that as well. It's like, you know, the simple analogy is like having your no claims bonus for your cars. You know, having no claims bonus is not mandatory, but it's optional, and once a lot of us have built up 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years plus, I think for a small premium increase, the majority of us would have or do have no claims bonus, and it's a similar kind of way. You know, tenant might seem perfect. We've done a very thorough reference check. We can't find any faults whatsoever. You've met them. You've got a good feeling. You've seen their previous property. You know they can afford the rent. They've got a good job. This is protection from the unknown. And the other thing, obviously, with the legal changes and obviously a lot of TV programs, eviction timescales are taking longer. Now, there's a whole raft of reasons for that and why that's happening. Obviously, some of these TV programs obviously make tenants more savvier as well, so there's a lot of free legal hit at the moment as well, so that can actually undermine and create more emotional energy and more stress for you as a landlord or an agent going through this process. Obviously, rent protection takes all that away. So this is a simple question that you should ask yourself. Now, this is something that somebody mentioned to me very long time ago before I was even considering being a landlord and buying the property, but it was the mindset of being a landlord. Now, there's always, you know, I think, you know, we work with thousands of agents across the UK and help them in various reasons, various areas, and what, you know, agents always laugh and joke, but they say, you know, there's a reputation that landlords are tight and we don't like to pay for anything, but that is true. And that's true because we've got an income to protect in terms of rent, and obviously we've got the mortgage, and you do have to think sometimes, what's worst case scenario? So could you afford to pay your mortgage for at least 6 months, let's just say that's the average eviction timescale, plus all the legal fees, which, you know, if you go to a solicitor, it could be 3,000 plus or ourselves for half that. Could you afford that? And that's per property. So to have that mindset, in an ideal world, in your account, that is your zero balance. Combined, obviously, with the rent protection insurance, it wouldn't need to be that. So if you've got rent protection, great. If you haven't, then you need to be thinking of this situation. It's all about your liquidity. Okay, I'm just checking any other questions. Somebody's asked, where do we get passwords for previous seminars? If you simply visit our site, if you register with our site, it takes the basic details, your email address, sends you a link, gives you a password, and then you can log into the account. Once you log into the account, you go to the marketing resources and you're away. If you haven't, if you've already got an account and you can't log in, you can simply reset your password and we can take it from there. Okay. Somebody asked, don't you have to have insurance if you have a ground, rent or lease on property? Yeah, again, potentially. Obviously, you have to have all, you have to have some sort of cover or insurance in place before you get that mortgage in place. And then it's not mandatory if you continue with that. If it's a stipulation of your lease, then obviously definitely you have to show it every single time. But that just depends. I think I've answered the majority of other questions as I've been speaking. Okay, so just to summarise, almost coming up to half an hour. So protect your investment, look at the insurance products, research them, consider them, look at ourselves, secure your rents, guarantors, best practices, minimise your risk, go through the best practices, look at what we've done. Don't just see it as a part-time job and you can just sit on your hands and just collect the rent and we'll focus about yields. And ultimately, you know, consider working with a quality letting agent or somebody that's ALA accredited as well. ALA accreditation for letting agents is obviously growing, and there's more and more ALA agents across the UK. You know, some great agents as well. They're not necessarily ALA accredited, but obviously that's something to look for as well. If you work with a letting agent, obviously yes, there's a cost associated to that, but however, you are 2/3 less likely to face any tenant arrears or rent arrears as well. And obviously they'll best advise you on a number of things as well. So we work with many agents and we do provide landlord referrals every single day across the UK to our partner network as well. So if that's something that we want us to help with, that's something that we can definitely help. Okay, Q&A. I'm just going to go through some more questions here. Okay, so tenant won't allow access for EPC or gas, they're being very stubborn and they're in rent arrears and I need to get them out. Okay, so, you know, really, really good question here. So it's a tough one because in order to move forward, you do need the copies of the EPC and gas, and if you haven't got them, you're going to need to get them off, obviously, the tenant. So you need to put that in writing, obviously, that you've set up the appointment, you want to come round, any objections, obviously, let you know, evidence it, keep all that information together, and you just need to keep records. There's still a risk if you go to court without those documents based on judge's discretion. But if you can evidence that you've obviously tried, you know, you've spoken to these people, you've put everything in writing, you've got letters, and your tenants are still not doing it, then there's still a risk, obviously, if it goes to court. But then if you can argue that case, and obviously, you know, one of our solicitors or whoever you instruct can argue that case for you, then there's a strong chance that you should get the eviction and it should go through. However, there's a small risk it may not. I want my tenant out. I've served the Section 8. However, the tenant wants to pay me, but I've refused the payment. Is that okay? You can't. So the simple answer is you can't refuse any payments whatsoever. So I understand why you've probably done that, because you've got a section. I'm assuming you've got a Section 21 potentially running in the background, but with the Section 21, it could be a 2-month notice, and you believe it might be faster to move on to Section 8, which is obviously ideal. But you can't refuse any payments whatsoever. So potentially take the payment and then obviously move on to Section 21 if you still want to get them out, and you might have to wait till the end of the tenancy or if you're in a fixed time. So there's lots of different options with that one. It's not a simple answer. But yeah, you cannot refuse any payments. Okay, last question. Actually, there's a couple more coming through. High Court enforcement bailiffs, I've seen them on the TV. They promise faster evictions. Is that possible? Or just TV? I think, yeah, I'm laughing at that. I know we've had a lot of phone calls on similar questions to this. So yes, 100%, you know, everything on TV seems to be a High Court enforcement officer recently. But, you know, just out of interest, we apply for what's called a Section 42 on every single case that has rent arrears. And around 5% of them get accepted. Therefore, you can then instruct the High Court Enforcement Officer. And then there's another process in order to do that as well, but it takes longer. Again, it's up to judge's discretion. There's no written law that says they have to approve a Section 42 and move to High Court Enforcement, because with some bailiffs, you can be waiting, you know, a minimum of 6 weeks to anything from 2 to 3 months, because lots has changed in the bailiff arena as well now, and bailiffs are going out in teams because of health and safety reasons. Okay, I think there's one or two popping through. ALRA stands for the Association of Residential Letting Agents. They've got a website, www.arla.co.uk. There's a big conference actually in London in the Excel Arena on March the 28th for landlords and agents. I know they've already got nearly 2,000 people attending. How much is rent protection? How much is your rent protection typically? So rent protection typically can be around £160 a year. That's it. And that'll cover your rent and legal cover. So it's a small fee to pay for that added protection. Okay, there's more questions coming through now. There's more questions coming through, so we'll feed back to everybody that's finding these questions out, but otherwise, that's enough from me for now. So thank you for attending this. For any information, you can call our free advice line. There's a note of it there. And for everyone that's attended this webinar, we'll send a quick email on the back of it, and we'll basically give you a free pre-court action letter for free of charge as well in regards to any tenant issue you've got. So that'll have a 90-day expiry on that. So if there's any tenant arrears or tenant issues that you may have, let us know, and then we can get reply back to you. If you reply back to the marketing email that gets sent on the back of that, then just reply back, and we're more than happy to help you with that. And just a note as well, for any legal cases that we do take on, we always offer rent protection and tenant reference in on the back of it in order to protect you as well. So that's something that we offer free of charge on the back of any legal case. So all the webinars that we host are driven by our audience and by our client base. So any landlords or agents out there would like topics or information that's something that we haven't covered before or anything that's up and coming, please let our marketing team know and we'll get something together. But otherwise, everybody enjoy the rest of their Wednesday, and thank you for your time, and thank you for logging on.